The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive.
Hi, folks, this is Bob Main, and you are listening to another episode of today's Survival Show, where my goal is to help you tap into the power of choice to live life on your own terms, exactly the way you want to live it, and to strengthen your resolve. We try to make survival simple, not extreme. Primarily, we help you do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. And if you are a first-time listener, thank you for tuning in. It is an honor to have you. This is a practical show. You're going to figure out that we don't engage in a lot of paranoia and conspiracy type thinking, just good old common sense. That's what we're all about, and how to live a more secure life. I like to put it that way, how to live a more secure life. And this is episode number 65 of today's Survival Show, and this is part number two, my follow-up to episode 64, which was the story of the frog and the scorpion and how that helps us survive. Understanding how the thinking of the frog got her in trouble by not recognizing the scorpions that are out there. And as I promised when I closed the show, I would get more in depth into the five areas that most people stumble over when they're trying to defend themselves, whether it's physically or emotionally, and that being the areas of recognition, recognizing that there's something wrong, palatability, knowing if you have a palatable situation that you can actually get yourself out of, and number three, available time, number four, coming up with the appropriate response, and number five, how do we operate in a state of adrenaline. I am going to expand on those in this show. Got a quick question for you to consider. I've asked this before, but I think I'm going to ask it again. How come you never hear a news headline or you never see anything on the news that says psychic wins the lottery? If they were so good at what they do, wouldn't they win every time? Okay. Anyway, just thought I'd let you ponder that one for a while. A couple of quick announcements before I knock out the main topics of the show. Our website is todayssurvival.com. The forum website, if you want to go directly there, todayssurvival.com/forum. Also, give me some feedback on iTunes, if you would. For those of you who are using iTunes, you can search Today's Survival Show and pull up all of our episodes and go ahead and subscribe. You'll get automatic downloads every time I post one. It will automatically start downloading into your iTunes library. Okay, and that's it for the announcements. I keep this short and sweet. This is not a real commercial show. I don't intend for it to be that way. Folks, I'm just a regular guy with an MP3 recorder and a laptop. This is my hobby. This is not something that I do for a living. I just have fun talking about how to live a more secure life. And actually, I'm in my home office dictating this right now, and it's a lot of fun to be home and not on the road. So let's get into these five areas that I finished up with in episode 64. First one, recognition. Okay, and I'm going to put a little bit of a self-defense flavor on this. You can apply this to other areas of your life, but for purposes of discussion and that great website, nononsenseselfdefense.com, I'm going to put a link to their website again in today's show notes. Awesome. Go there, nononsenseselfdefense.com. But let's talk about how to recognize when there's something wrong, that sixth sense you should develop. Wouldn't it be cool if crime and violence happened with a transporter similar to the one that's used in Star Trek? Okay, what I meant is if that kind of technology existed, here's a scenario. You'd be walking to your car 1 minute and an attack would occur or something would happen, and all you'd have to do is just push a button and say, "Beam me up, Scotty," and you'd be transported to a different planet with friendlier people on it. Okay, that's what I mean. Wouldn't that be cool? But that's not reality. And as I mentioned in episode 64, let's talk about a dose of reality. If you lived in a science fiction world like what I just talked about, you could immediately recognize what happened. what's happening, and that things are no longer normal, and that some kind of a violent alien's coming at you, but that's not reality. What we have to do is we have to train our mind, and with a little bit of training of our mind, you can be ready for this kind of problem. You can't beam me up, Scotty. You can't do that. That's not a way to get out of it. That's not going to be the appropriate response, because obviously that's fantasy world. It's just not going to work. You can't just whip out your ray gun and start zapping the aliens. You have to have some kind of a realistic response. And, of course, violence doesn't happen like that. It's usually pretty hard to realize that a situation is heading towards some type of crime and violence. It's kind of tough to figure out that it's heading down that road. And usually when you do figure it out, it's a split second, and the whole thing could be over with, or even in just a couple of seconds. And have you ever thought to yourself this? Have you ever considered this? Have you ever thought, well, sure, the situation wasn't normal. There was something wrong there, but I didn't think it was that dangerous. As I mentioned in the last episode, I've got some personal experience with this. When I told you about the family member at a family gathering, and I just, you know, I felt that there was not something normal there. There was something very abnormal going on, and that sixth sense started taking over in me, and I started thinking, you know what, something's wrong here, but I just didn't think it was that dangerous where the guy was going to go try to get a gun and shoot me. It didn't dawn on me. You have to realize that crime is a process. Crime is a process. Not only that, once you know what crime looks like, then it'll become very obvious when it's developing. And even when someone is volatile, when you know what volatility looks like, when you can see the process start to develop, it'll be obvious, folks. Again, it's mind training. The problem is that often we get so emotionally involved, and we get so captivated by our upbringing and by the thoughts that we've been taught to have, sometimes starting all the way back to our childhood when we were kids, that we fail to recognize the signs of a problem coming on. And if you're able to recognize when someone's trying to set you up for an attack, and like I said, even if it's a physical, emotional, verbal attack, whatever, then you've taken one of the biggest steps in being able to mentally prepare yourself to stop it. The more warning you get, the more you can prepare for and also double check that it's really a real threat. And this is very much just like preparing for emergencies, like hurricanes and floods and earthquakes and fires, rioting, looting, stuff like that. The more warning that you can get, the more you can prepare for those types of threats. The more you can start recognizing when those are starting to take place, the easier it is to prepare for those. So as I mentioned before in episode 64, just trust your gut. That's probably the most important thing I can tell you at this point. Now let's talk about palatability. Here's a question I want you to think about. Have you ever really sat down and thought about how you think? Have you ever thought about what is your actual thinking process? Do you really know, do you really understand where a lot of the ideas that you believe in came from? Have you ever considered this? Why don't I know? Why don't I know something? And have you ever thought about sometimes we easily confuse what we think we know and what really we actually know? Now, that might sound kind of strange, but let me give you an example. My grandmother taught me at a real young age something that still stays with me today. She always called me Bobby. And my grandmother would often say, Bobby, always pay more attention to what someone doesn't say rather than what they do say. Sometimes she put it a little bit of a different way. She'd say, Bobby, always pay more attention to what they don't do rather than what they do. And this is what I mean when I say, have you ever stopped and thought to yourself, what is it that I don't know? What is it I don't know about this person? What is it that I don't know about this situation? That was my very first read between the lines session when my grandmother, I think I was probably about 8 or 9 years old, she first taught me that lesson. And have you ever stopped to think and ask yourself how much of what you do is based in logic and how much of it is natural programming? Sometimes, due to our backgrounds or our upbringing, it's hard to think outside of the box. Sometimes we don't even know that we're in a box. And the truth is that we do most of our thinking out of habit. We have pre-established assumptions and theories and ways of thinking that we use to function every day. And they show up in our actions, and they also become self-reinforcing, and they also, at times, they limit us. They limit what we think. The more we think a certain way, the less able we are to think outside that box, to start thinking in other ways. We're a lot less likely to be open-minded. You've heard me say many, many times, your mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. And a lot of times, we take for granted that our thinking is correct. We take for granted it's correct because that's what we were always told. That's what our parents taught us. That's what our grandparents taught us. That's what their parents taught them. And it just kind of gets passed down generation to generation. And a lot of times, we fail to see some of the huge gaping holes, some of those Grand Canyons that I talked about in the previous episodes. Excuse me, in episode 64. And speaking of some of my previous podcasts, as you know from listening to some of my earlier shows, I'm a huge proponent of creating options in your life. And that's why I talk about the power of choice so often. This applies especially in situations outside of our normal existence. And one big problem that faces a lot of normal people who find themselves in a violent situation is that they are usually desperately trying to come up with not only an effective solution, but they're also trying to come up with a solution that's going to reconcile with their own personal philosophy, their own world view that they were taught. Okay? And in short, they're looking for some kind of a palatable answer that doesn't contradict with their view of society. And that's what I mean by palatable. They're looking for a response that's going to make them feel good. They want a feel-good response because our world's taught us, and unfortunately, a lot of young people today are taught in school, you have to come up with a feel-good response. There can't be any winners and losers. Nobody can get hurt. We got to stay politically correct. We have to come up with a feel-good response. Okay, here's an example of what I'm talking about. A person who says, well, violence never solved anything. Violence never solves the problem. They can hold that belief as long as they're not being assaulted. And usually the people who subscribe to the violence never solved anything theory have usually not developed the means to be effective at using force. Otherwise, I tell you, they would use it. But because of the beliefs system that they have, of what they were taught, even if it's not correct, the use of force is off the table for them. So they start fishing around for what they consider a more effective response that fits within their paradigms. For example, trying to talk a person out of attacking you or trying to get them to be reasonable. Unfortunately, the person attacking you, they're way past that. They're way past the point of being reasonable. Some of them are just not going to be reasonable, and you're just simply not going to talk them out of it. And it boils down to what's more important, your safety or protecting how you think. Let me say that again. What's more important, your safety or protecting how you think? Sadly, most people get victimized while they're trying to come up with an answer that's going to fit their everyday paradigm and their belief system. Okay, so that covers recognition and palatability. The third step where people often get themselves into trouble, or the third point that I want to talk about, is available time. One of the primary strategies of a violent individual is to immediately apply an overwhelming degree of force, shock and awe, to achieve their goals. And it's critical that you understand that this is not a fight, it's an assault. Okay? And you've heard me talk about it before. Assault is a behavior. Assault is not a piece of equipment. I can't stand it. Let's talk about guns for a minute. I can't stand it when people call an AR-15, for example, an assault rifle. That's not an assault rifle. Assault is often what people do with a similar type of weapon, like the military will use an M16 to launch an assault. But that's a behavior. Okay, the overwhelming force, the element of surprise, it is a behavior, it is not a piece of equipment. So people that want to ban assault rifles, they don't know what they're banning. They're banning nothing because it's a behavior, it's not a piece of equipment. All right, I don't want to get off on that tangent. But there isn't usually a normal buildup in a crime like this. You know, things like yelling and screaming and what's also called a threat display, you don't often see that sometimes. Sometimes the available time is not much because they don't engage in the yelling and the screaming and the warning signs called a threat display. If they did, that would give you time to mentally prepare, but it doesn't often happen. And the objective of an assault is to immediately render you incapable of resisting. They don't want you to be able to put up any kind of counter fight. So the behind the scenes setup of this whole action, this whole crime, might take some time. But sometimes we don't get a chance to recognize it. We don't see it coming. And so the available time that we have to come up with the response is severely shortened. And what that means is the whole incident is going to come at you very, very fast. And in this situation, it's almost impossible to find an effective and a palatable response. So I would suggest getting some training. Getting some training on awareness and avoidance strategy. You know where you can get some of that type of training? Firearms courses give you a lot of training in awareness and avoidance. Force-on-force courses, like those that are taught by Suarez International, or Front Sight, or Tactical Response. So if you do own a firearm, go to some of those combat training courses, because that's going to start giving you the type of training on awareness and avoidance strategies that you need. All right, and hopefully this is going to give you a little bit of time to mentally shift gears. You know, it's your life, folks, that I'm referring to. And I hope that you think that your life is worth more than your belief system. And I also hope that you think it's worth enough to be able to get the training so that you can react in whatever little bit of available time that you have. Okay, so let's talk about the fourth area that people often get themselves in trouble, and that's the appropriate response. The appropriate response to the bad action that's being taken upon you. And this is scary stuff. Okay, but just because you perceive that there's an extreme danger, it doesn't necessarily mean that that level of danger really exists. Okay, being emotional and being frightened and afraid doesn't really give you the license to go berserk. Now, this might sound a little contradictory to what I've just been talking to you about, but try not to overjudge a situation. You know, it doesn't give you a license to go berserk. It doesn't give you a license to start, you know, shooting up the whole place and using what's called a non-appropriate response. It doesn't give you the license to start hauling off and physically punching someone when it's not justified. All right, you have to understand what really is the appropriate response. It's not going to get you into further trouble, and possibly not get you in any more trouble than your attacker. All right, and there's also some people who believe that there are no rules in a street fight. Okay, now, hear my words carefully. There are people who believe that there are no rules in a street fight. Okay, that's not true. there are established legal rules, legal parameters about what you can and cannot do in any situation. Now, I use the word fight on purpose because a fight is not the same as self-defense. Okay? In my opinion, self-defense, there are no rules in self-defense. You know what the one rule of self-defense is? Win. That's your rule. You got to win. Self-defense is legal. Fighting is not legal. So that's why I say there's no rules in a fight. In the heat of the moment, though, the problem is a lot of people are going to claim that their actions were in self-defense when really they were fighting. Be careful. Be careful of that. Make sure that it truly is in self-defense. And those of us who are concealed carry permit holders, you know, we understand this because hopefully, if the instructor did their job, in many states, there is a lecture, and the instructor talks about what is a true self-defense situation and what is not. And if you haven't received that kind of training, get on the internet. Go to nononsenseselfdefense.com and some of the other websites that do talk about what is really self-defense and what's not. Okay, any action that you take on has to be appropriate to the level of danger that exists. And especially when using lethal force. Now, don't get this confused with what we have called in some states stand your ground laws and the castle doctrine. Okay, that applies to you being in your home. Now, thankfully, in states like Texas and Florida and many others, if someone is in your home and they're not authorized to be there and they wish to do you harm, you can use whatever force necessary to remove that threat. Okay? Some states don't allow that. Some states say you cannot use more force than your attacker. What a joke. Okay? Don't confuse that with what I'm talking about right now when I say that you have to use an appropriate amount of force for the level of danger that exists. I'm talking about if you're out on the street, for example, and somebody assaults you. Understanding the law is critical, and understanding the levels of threat and your own internal responses are going to help you better tailor your actions to the situation and stay within the boundaries of self-defense. Okay, don't turn it into a fight. Don't get offensive. Stay on the defensive is what I'm trying to talk about. Stay on the defensive. Okay, you just want the person to stop doing what they're doing. That's the main rule there, is get them to stop doing what they're doing. That would be an appropriate response. Okay, and number five, the last one before I close out the show, and that's adrenaline. There's no doubt that your adrenaline is going to be going sky high and it's going to be tough for you to think in a dangerous situation. And modern technology has given us the ability to explore how the human brain works in this kind of a state of mind. We also have a good understanding of the relationship between the brain and the body. Okay, there's a big, complex body of work, huge correlation between how the brain and the body work together in a crisis. I covered some of this in episode number 8. In episode 8, I talked about how to handle fear in an emergency, and I talked about a concept, and I talked about a drug, and I talked about something called epinephrine. Epinephrine, which is also known as an adrenaline, it's a natural drug that your mind produces. It's a very powerful factor in determining your actions during a crisis. And the same is true when it comes to determining what part of your brain is driving you in the crisis. Okay, a good example what I'm talking about. Let's say you got two pilots in an airplane. You got the captain and the co-captain, and there's a crisis. Which one is in control? Think of it that way. Which pilot is in control? Different parts of your brain serve different functions, and there's a proven connection between what's happening on the outside and what part is active on the inside of your brain. And this is pretty complex, and I'm not a complete expert in this, but I've studied it. It's also known as the adrenal stress response. People change in a crisis. And they change not always for the better. I want you to understand that. Oftentimes, our physical and our mental clarity are greatly reduced. And sometimes we resort to a very primitive and raw state. And not only is functioning more difficult, but our perceptions also get altered. And, you know, we lose fine motor skills. And somebody could practice something thousands and thousands and thousands of times. For example, how to shoot in a self-defense situation, or how to wield a knife, or how to wield a club, or how to wield a bat. And we can practice it over and over and over again. Martial artists sometimes run into this trap as well. They practice a technique over and over and over again, and they think they've got it down. And then all of a sudden, they revert because of adrenaline. In a real-life situation, they revert back to that primitive and raw state. And they start losing their fine motor skills. They start losing their ability to reason. In other words, their internal reality might not be an accurate reflection of the external reality and what's going on. And unfortunately, a lot of people in this condition, they start reacting to what they believe is their internal reality. And this is why a lot of people, although they're completely convinced that they're legally defending themselves, are actually fighting. Okay, your adrenal response can easily create two totally different problems. One is that it renders you incapable of action, and the second problem is that it causes you sometimes to go berserk on someone. And neither of those is a good option. So, you know, I could do a whole nother show, maybe two shows, on how to properly act when you're in that high adrenaline state of mind. Okay? And I'm going to do a little bit more research and talk about that. A lot of it has to do with breathing, but the problem is that you've got seconds sometimes, at the very most, in order to come up with that response. And, you know, trying to control your heart rate and control your breathing and control your thought patterns, it's tough. I am going to do a show on that, but the best thing I can tell you is get lots of training on that. Just like anything else, get lots of training on that. Get a lot of training where you're put in force-on-force situations, where you're put into stressful situations. And as I mentioned earlier in this show, even if it's just a simple shooting class, all right, a shooting class where not IDPA competitions, like I like to talk about a lot, because that's, you know, you're not really being put under a whole lot of stress in IDPA pistol competitions. You know, I'm talking about a real combat class, even real combat martial arts. You know, my son does a lot of martial arts tournaments, and he's in there, he's mixing it up, and he's fighting with other kids that are at pretty much his same skill level in a martial arts tournament. Now that is real stress training right there, all right? Because it's an actual fight. It's a contest. Now, they're not trying to kill each other, okay? I mean, they're not trying to hurt one another. You know, this is not a situation to where one kid is trying to assault another kid, but it's about as close as they can get. And same thing when adults take martial arts, when you're sparring and you're grappling with somebody else. That's pretty close to, a stressful, high adrenaline situation that you're going to be in, because you don't know what your opponent's going to throw at you. And that's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of training. So if you've considered getting some of that training, go do it. Go do it. It's highly effective. I'll recommend Krav Maga. I'll recommend mixed martial arts classes and events like that are very good. So I'll close with this question. What are the issues affecting your ability to stay alive? They probably aren't what you think they are. And with that, I'm going to bring this show to a close. Thanks for listening to episode number 65. My name is Bob Main. This is today's survival show, where we help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms. And if someone does attack you, hopefully you have been able to employ some of what you heard in this show to come up with the appropriate response, hopefully in the appropriate amount of time, even if your adrenaline is running high. Do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. And thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till